219 to talk. Yeah, you running your mouth. Yeah, you running your mouth. 219 to talk. Yeah, you running your mouth. Yeah, you running your mouth.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to 219 The Talk. It's none other than your host, Queenie and JD, the barber of JD's Man Cave. And we also have calling in, he hasn't called in yet, it's Reginald Shelby, Big Reggio. He's going to be on the air with us in just a few minutes. We also want to go ahead and let's do something a little different today. Let's start the show off with a little bit of music while everybody getting themselves together for this new time. How about that? So we'll start off this show with a little bit of Billy Cook saying, let's see. He got a lot on this stuff. Up sweet. So let's see what we got. All right. I guess we could start with his song, Forever Girl, right here on 219.
Met a girl whose love was pure just like the sun. She moved with such grace, and I knew she was the one. Her hair smelled like roses in a garden from afar. So I asked her of her name, and she smiled with a bow. For she knew I had been watching her out of curiosity. With the passing, rising, bubbling over, you're my fantasy queen. I wanna be the feeling that you need inside. Mine's a reason more, and for she looked well, ecstasy. Yeah.
Te quiero, te necesito, te amo forever. I want.
In harmony, she led me to the waterfall. She started to dance with the table like an hourglass. She put me in a trance. For she knew I had been watching her out of curiosity. With the passing, rising, bubbling over, you're my fantasy queen. I wanna be the feeling that you need inside. My three or more.
Jeannie, what's going on?
And JD the Barber.
All right, we have On It On Us on the line. We got, how you doing, On It On Us?
Hey, Queenie. Hey, JD.
Hey, what's happening? What's happening? What's going on?
Not much. Hey, we just floating around here in H-Town waiting on the water to go down.
Yeah, floating for real. we got Troy and Ray on the line from the Crooked Lab. How you doing?
Hey, what's going on? This Troy and Ray down in the dirt and sit there watching all the rain come in. Loving every minute of it.
I guess JD the Bob is distracted. So let's get into this. I want to talk about this Breonna Taylor situation that's going on. Protests have ensued. Two police officers have been shot. Everybody is upset. I'm going to start with On It, On It. What do you feel about it?
Well, as a product of growing up in the 60s, I just say things have not changed, that it's sad that we can't trust the justice system. Justice is not on our side, even for a young black innocent girl that got caught up between, I guess, whatever her boyfriend was doing and the police. Who gave permission for a no-knock warrant? Why? What were the circumstances? Did you not check to see if someone else would be home? It's sad that this baby has gotten lost her life, and nobody is going to pay the price for her death. The police are basically walking away scot-free. I feel like a hunted. I feel like black people are being hunted. We are just fair game for the police, because whatever happens to us, no one is going to bring them to justice. So therefore, we say no justice, no peace. So they're rioting, and everybody wants to point a finger. You know, they're rioting, they're looting, they're doing this, but everybody is forgetting of the other color persuasion, that the KK, they rioted and they burned our homes and they chased us out of communities and they burned down, you know, Tulsa. But who said anything against them? We're talking about a young woman who hadn't even began to live her life, innocent, caught up in an unfortunate situation, killed by the police.
You know, another thing, I totally agree with you, because when the rioting was going on when George Floyd got murdered, a lot of people were saying, well, no violence, but I was like this, you know, what is it going to take to shake this nation, you know? And a lot of people don't understand that, like they say, God ain't in all of this breaking in the business. Yeah, I agree with that. But protest has to happen. All of the protesting, people showing their frustration outright, because I'm going to tell you something. When we sit back and we don't do anything, we don't say anything, and we just say what other, like you say, people of other ethnicity or whatever, they feel like in a minute black folks gonna go right back to sleep. In a minute they just gonna move on like nothing ever happened. In a minute, and we have to show them that no, we're not going to sleep again. We're not gonna be silent again. We're not going back into, like, baby, you know, somebody run on the plantation, they escape, then they come back and get beat, or they kill somebody as an example, so everybody go right back into their little shack and start right back to on the cotton field like nothing ever happened, scared of Mister. Well, guess what? Ain't nobody scared of Mister no more. You know, y'all are killing innocent people. Y'all, and somebody has to stand up and say something. And they had to know that protest was gonna, that it was gonna go down like that. They had to know. They had to know people were already upset. Then you thought if you threw $12 million at it, that it was just gonna go away. No, wasn't going away. No, like you say, no justice, no peace.
Let me explain something to you. You white folks know what they're doing. They know that in a minute we're going to forget about it and shut the hell up and go back to status quo. That's all they're depending on. They are not going to stop until there has to be violence met with violence. See, we learned violence from them through the slave trade. They beat the hell out of us. They tortured us. They raped. They pillaged. They did what they wanted to, and now they expect us to be peaceful. You know, they're still doing what they want to do.
And they got some of us on their side talking about just calm down, just be peaceful.
Well, you got to understand something. Ever since we got off the slave ship, there has been those Negroes who wanted to please master. And we still have a slave, let's please master mentality in our community. And they have it right in place. They right up under your nose.
Yeah. Oh, I don't. They warn. Maybe they say, "Well, I don't want nobody messing with my house. I work hard for myself. Don't mess with, you know. They don't mess with me, so I don't know why I gotta get involved." And we got them all weaved all into our.
Well, the thing is, they still divide and conquer,
just like
they did during slave time. Soon as a Negro get $1.50 over bus fare, he say he didn't overpay.
Mm. Yeah.
All of a sudden, he's part of the privileged folks. Not knowing that they call him a nigga, too. He's just a nigga with a little money. That's all.
Well, with that said, I watched a documentary with Charles Barkley, who went to this interview with him. They went to a meet with this Aryan leader of the Aryan Nation.
Oh,
and
did
you see that? He basically fell short of just coming out and saying, "I admire you, Charles Barkley, but you're still black. You just a Negro with some money. He's still black, and I still don't want you in my neighborhood. I don't want you marrying my white women, but I admire you because you have money, more money than I'll ever see in my lifetime. That's the only thing you got going for you."
Exactly. Yeah, I saw that video, too. He was the white dude was one of those alt-right leaders.
Yeah.
Interviewed him. I saw it. Yeah, that's what I say. We have so much racism that I don't know if racism will ever die, because racism is a part of American heartbeat. You know, they don't understand that Donald Trump simply amplifies the heartbeat of America. You know, when he became the president, there was always a underlying river of racism that was ready to flow at any given moment. So when Donald Trump became president and he came out with all of his, racist rhetoric, that opened the door for a lot of white folks that had been sitting back in the dark, not scared to say what they wanted to say. They felt it was all right now to start out of their racist rhetoric.
Huh.
That's why you see all the videos on Facebook of the white boys getting knocked out.
Mm.
Talking about nigga this and nigga that. See, they fail to realize we are not our ancestors. We ain't as damn peaceful and complacent as our ancestors were. We will knock you all the way out.
You say something, Ray?
Oh, no, I was just sitting here contemplating and thinking that
I'm 100% for people standing up for what should have been stood up a long time ago. I'm 100% for it because it's about time that we as blacks or our people start to stand up for something and not just getting ran over. But sometimes I look at it like, you know, back when what she mentioned about when the KKK was out, when they did stuff to us, beat us, burn up our homes, they didn't burn up stuff in their neighborhoods. They didn't tear up stuff in their neighborhoods. They only tore stuff in our neighborhoods. But see, what we have to understand is we shouldn't tear up stuff in our neighborhood because this is where we live. So I'm like, this protesting, that's fine, all that, but don't tear up your neighborhood because I understand the situation. I understand about the Breonna Taylor. I understand all that. But don't tear up your neighborhood because these people want you to tear up your neighborhood. They love when you tear up your neighborhood. They don't care because they don't have to live there. They don't have to rebuild. So and then when you go to rebuild, who are you gonna go to? You go to them. Most people go to them unless you got some people in the hood that do contracting as far as black owned businesses. But we gotta learn to do. I'm not telling nobody or condoning or telling you go tear up the white people neighborhood. But what I'm saying is don't tear up your neighborhood because you tear up your neighborhood, you got to live there. They don't care if you tear up your neighborhood.
Well, see,
I'm talking about real protesting. Like they are seeing these people in the streets marching with a sign. Letting people know we are not going to deal with this. Now, it is a generation of folk, and it's some folk getting stuff started by going in, like we saw earlier with the George Floyd thing. People were just, you'll see a white man throw a bottle in a business, and then you'll see other people follow suit. You know, you do have those people out there that's doing some crazy stuff, you know, to kind of take the attention away from what really needs to be done. You know what I'm saying? So
let me explain something first of all. We are never, ever going to be financially equal to the head start that white folks got in America, first of all. Until all these black billionaires that we got on these football fields and on in these rap videos and all that get together and start some black-owned financial institutions and start loaning black money to black businesses to start black business and produce black commerce. As long as they keep us divided and all the blacks with all the money stay to themselves and don't come together financially, and they got us whooped. Because let me tell you something. They have an economic monster that's against us. See, we have a lot of rich black folks and a lot of wealthy white folks. See, there's a difference between rich and wealthy. See what I'm saying? We got a few black billionaires. We got a very few. But there are a lot of white billionaires. We got a few black millionaires. Very few. But compared to the white millionaires in the world, we need to come together and start a black-owned global bank to start loaning money and even in the playing field for black-owned businesses. Then we'll start seeing black-owned grocery stores in neighborhoods. We'll start seeing black-owned this and that in our neighborhoods because we aren't able to get the loans to start businesses in our own neighborhood. You go down there as a black man talking about you finna open a grocery store in the hood, they're going to look at you like, are you crazy? You think we finna give you the money to do that? No, they're not going to. But if we had some black-owned financial institutions that could foot the bill and get some black-owned grocery stores in those neighborhoods, then we see a change in our neighborhoods. And until those things happen and we come together financially with all these millions on these football fields, all these millions on these basketball courts, all these millions on these golf courses, all these millions in sports and music and movements and all that come together, we are always going to be financially retarded to what these white folks have already started. They had a 400 and some odd year head start on us, man. And we ain't going to never catch up as long as we stay divided. And this is all it is to us. So we can protest, we can holler, we can loot, we can burn down this and burn down that, but it ain't got nothing done, nothing, until we can get ourselves financially stable and start hitting them white folks in their pockets and stop shopping at Walmart, and we're able to go to Willie Sam's instead of Sam Walmart store. We go to Willie Sam's store and get the same thing and the same quality. Until we can do that and hit them in their pockets, they don't give a damn about us protesting. Because we looted one target and went and bought stuff at another damn target. So they don't care.
Well, you know, one thing that the other gentleman said, you know, to stop looting and raiding and burning in our neighborhood. But we say our neighborhood, but guess who owned the stores and everything in our neighborhood? So what they're doing is true enough. You are in my, I'm destroying my neighborhood. I'm destroying the white man, the Asian, the Mexican. All of them are in our neighborhood. So we're destroying their businesses. But guess what? They have the insurance to rebuild, but what do? They will go elsewhere to another black neighborhood and build over there. And what do? We follow them wherever they go, and we buy from them. And then the other point that I wanted to make, as far as the people, the athletes, the movie stars, or whatever, their money and getting together and, you know, setting up financial institutions, we don't have to wait on them. I talk to our people every day about how to set up generational wealth. That's where it begins. It doesn't begin with them. It begins with us down here. That's where it begins. A skyscraper cannot exist without a solid foundation. For as high as a building stands, the foundation has to go that deep. So it starts with us. It starts with our pennies, our nickels, our dimes. Instead of going out blowing money on foolishness, and I talk about this all the time. We don't invest in things that we need. There is a way for us to build generational wealth, and when we pass away, we pass it to our children. But we are selfish. We are very selfish. When I die, I ain't worried about the person left behind me. If it ain't paid, you know, I don't need my credit after I die. I don't need this after I die. That's where it begins. It begins as a foundational thing.
Well, we were taught slavery to be selfish. We were taught through slavery to be selfish, and it's been passed down from generation to generation.
But some things, we can blame a lot of things on slavery, but then some things, when you become an adult and life teaches you better, you do better. We have access to information to do better. We don't want to do better. Some of us don't want to do better. We're not. To do better costs us something. It goes against the grain, our very fiber. I got to give up something. I got to give up impressing Boo-Boo and Cece over there on the next block. That's what we're caught up against. That, you know, we blame a lot on slavery. We do. And slavery was an injustice to us, but we have access. We have access to books. We have access to the internet. There are books out there that have told us what we have been through. You have many of them yourself, JD. I've read a couple of them myself, but I don't need to read every book that's out there talking about what we've been through as a people to realize it starts with an individual, and that's me, that's you, that's Queenie, it's the other gentleman on the line. It starts with you. What are you going to do? If it doesn't do anything but change your home, your family, change that, and then it spreads abroad.
I understand the neighborhoods we live in, as you say, are not our neighborhoods, but technically, true enough, the white people might own it, but we live in it. So technically, it's our neighborhood. Now, it's
you're
up
right.
to, like you said, it's up to us as individuals to do things about it. But as JD was saying, everything was brought out from slavery. There's a book called Breaking the Chains of Psychological Slavery. If us as parents, grandparents, or great-grandparents are not making our kids sit down and read and learn a skill, or if you see your child embracing a skill and we don't push them to advance in that skill, whether it's drawing, whether it's engineering, whether it's artwork, whether it's anything, whatever the skill may be, and is that psychological slavery, because back in slavery, they broke you to want to read books. They broke you. They didn't want you reading books because they didn't want you to know what they know. They broke you from wanting to be on your own. But these neighborhoods that we're in, if you're looting in them or destroying them, we still got to live here. The white folks don't live here. They might own it, but they don't have to live here. Now, I was watching a movie the other day. I don't know if y'all seen it yet. It's called The Banker.
Oh, great movie. Yeah.
And that movie, it's called The Banker. That movie was teaching. It's back in the day of racism 60. And how two black guys made it or made good money by doing what most people would think they could do. But anyway, I ain't gonna spoil it for you. So if you haven't seen it, I would suggest you look at it. It's a nice movie.
It's
a good
awesome.
Movie about our history. And
it's
what
awesome.
I'm saying is, people in our neighborhoods, we got a lot of guys here out here in this world right now. They're very creative. Now, and I tell people all the time, if you're smart enough to get out here on the street and sell dope, you're smart enough to do the math to know how much dope you need to push to make this much money, you're smart enough to create your own business. And I tell these youngsters that, and I talk to them, and I say, if you're smart enough to tell me how much a key is worth or an ounce or whatever all it is, I'm not into drugs, so I don't know much about it. But if you can tell me how much you need to sell in order to make this much money by this certain amount of time, you're smart enough to put that knowledge towards making a business, because all businesses are what they do. They sell. So we need to push these individuals, and we need to push these individuals to do better, to teach them to do better, because in order for them to want to do better. And I've told some of these guys around here, I said, why are y'all letting these people come in these neighborhoods that's not from around here running these stores? And I told my daughter the other day, I said, who owns the hair industry in this area with the black neighborhood? The Asians. There's no reason for Asians to be running hair when they don't wear weave. They don't wear pieces.
Now.
They don't wear all that blacks wear. So why aren't y'all, as far as women, trying to go out here and teach or sell the hair that they're selling to run them up out of here? Because they making the money off of our neighborhood, off of our people, because they have no clue about hair. But the person that they got in there telling you about the hair is a black person.
Well, a lot
right.
of us, we don't want to put the effort in. Do you realize to start up a business and to stick with it? Like, I'm starting up, you know, two new businesses as one. I don't know what I was thinking. But, you know, you have to accept that it's not a quick fix. You got to put some sweat, blood, and tears into it. You got to take rejection. You got to, you know, you got to keep pushing every day. You got to, even when you don't see results, you got to get up and you got to show up. You got to have faith in yourself. But see, that's it. Now they'll get out there and they'll the drug market is a quick fix. Hey. hey, little mama, God, what is it? However they sell it, you know. And she gonna come running. She gonna go do what she gotta do to bring you back the money. But when you people will buy into foolishness before they will faith, and that's what it is, because it you gotta show up when nobody else shows up for your dream, and you gotta make it happen. You gotta keep pushing. So, see, to open up a store, you gotta put the money into it. It's not a quick fix. You got to get the building. You got to put the money up. You got to get the product, you know, and you got to have faith that the people are going to come and seed into what is seed into your dream. But it's your dream. And if nobody else shows up, you got to show up. You got to make it happen. You got to pay that price until you start getting paid. Right there, right now. That's where we fall short.
Right. And another thing, another place where we fall short on this is that we don't teach our kids financial literacy. You know, they don't understand interest rates. And I'm just saying as a whole in our community. We as black households don't teach financial literacy. We don't teach about credit and interest rates and investing and all that type of stuff. We teach our kids to go to school, get an education, get out, get a job, and work. And become
Pay
and when you do when you teach
astronomical student loans.
Only thing right. And the only thing you're teaching a child when you're teaching them that is to become a consumer. You're not teaching them to become an entrepreneur, an investor, a mogul. You're not teaching your child that. You're not giving them the tools to become that. And another problem that we have, and I don't understand black people and the psychology behind it, is thinking that the oppressor is going to educate the oppressed.
The oppressor responsible
for educating your oppressor, the person that did
come on
getting you out.
Come on.
Why would white people teach you your black child to compete with their white child?
Yes.
Why would they ever do that in public school?
You need to put that out there on Facebook, baby, and see what kind of response you get. I double dog dare you. Put that out there on Facebook. See what kind. Why would the oppressor? What would they? What do they benefit from? First of all, they know if you really check facts, we are the stronger people. We are the smarter, the more intellectual people. It's been tried, tested, and true. But again, we don't believe in ourselves because we have been watered down. To believe
we built the pyramids and not one track involved. Not one train, not one track involved. We built the pyramids. So if we had the intellect in our blood to construct something that they still have a problem constructing right now with all the heavy equipment, how in the world do you think those people are not scared of us?
I don't know. You need to ask your folks.
They will never ever educate us enough to compete with their white kids and knock them out of their right, what they feel is their rightful place as being above us. They're not going to give us the education. So many of our kids, the young people, give them exactly what they want. They quit school. They only go so far in education. They end up with a GED or whatever, and think that they're gonna make it in life. But with a GED or no school education, you are already retarding your whole life.
You know what they do, JD? Doing
anything to you.
You know what they do, and we fall for it. Hook, line, and sinker. They teach our kids to play with balls. That's what they do. They play with ball. They stick some money in their face to give them a scholarship. Come play ball with us. Dumb as a box of rocks. We don't care if you can read, write, or even count to five. As long as you can, what did that reporter tell LeBron James? Shut up and dribble the ball. That's their mentality, and we feed into it. We feed into it. If a child can dribble a ball, we don't care if he's a IT prep or a English major. We don't care about that. As the gentleman say, you know, hey, we don't care if they can draw or whatever. We don't care about that, baby. Can you bounce a ball? Can you hit a ball? Can you throw a ball? Can you kick a ball? We want their names up in life. We want them to be sports great, and we sell our children out every year. We sell our children out every day. Every day we do it. We fund the NFL. We are the Major League Baseball Society. It is our money. We are the Soccer Society. It is our money that funds these organizations. It's us, because we go see our kids. We so happy that our kids can bounce a ball, throw a ball, whatever sport, you know. We so happy that they can do that, and we put our money into it instead of saying, hey, while you're out here making this money, have you thought about a mutual fund? Have you thought about an annuity? Do you even have life insurance? What plans have you made for the future? Have you invested in a business just in case you break your arm or something happens?
And the white one.
Hey, Otis, I was just telling JD, I said they don't even know what a mutual fund is. All they know about is a checking account and a savings account.
And the banks I got proof on my computer. You know, I got proof on my computer how the banks are setting up, raping us every day. When we met our 401ks, our IRAs, when we get our income tax, you can't tell nobody, hey, why don't you come over here and invest your money in a mutual fund, an annuity, a dividend, I can tell you how to make it grow next year. You can take some out. Stop paying, you know, how to your taxes, how to make this money work for you. No, they don't know, because what do we do when we get these income tax? We go fund Samsung, Galaxy, Apple. We go buy these TVs, these PlayStations, and 2 months later you can go to the pawn shop and get all that stuff for darn near free.
And look, and you ride around in the black neighborhood, and all you see is furniture. Furniture and beds and everything is thrown out where they done went and bought another little do-nothing, worth-nothing couch and to fill a whole house up with a whole bunch. And me and Jenny were saying that
$14.99, whole house.
But this old boy is funny. Yeah, but the thing about that is, like I said, we don't teach our kids financial literacy. They not understanding that, okay, the man is paying you $1 million to run the football, right? But the man who is you, if he can pay you $1 million, he's a billionaire. All those owners and whatnot are wealthy billionaires. You know, you rich. You black, you in the NFL, you rich. But the owners are wealthy. There's a big-ass difference between rich and wealthy.
Like, for example, if they lose you, it don't hurt them. But if you lose them,
you're done.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right. Replaceable. You're replaceable.
But we rather... make sure our child got the right kind of Jordans on his feet or the right kind of cleats, then buy that baby some books. Or buy that, we're buying him a PlayStation, but won't get him a computer. Won't get him a computer at the house so he can.
We okay with them just knowing how to read instead of reading and comprehending what they read. They don't teach that no more in school.
Man, they in their college
work. Conflict resolution,
niggas ain't calling words. That ain't reading. They calling words.
Lord have mercy.
Reading is understanding what the hell you just read.
Exactly.
Yeah, not calling words because you can pronounce it don't mean you understand. And we got
too
many kids.
They don't even know how to count. They depend upon
exactly.
other people to do too much for them. You know, I have clients, you know, I do taxes, and I have some clients, I try to, you know, I want to explain to you what I did for you every year. And I have some clients, you know, some young black people that are my clients, been with me for 3-4 years, and I call them up and I said, okay, this is what I did to get you this. Oh, that's all right, Miss Onis. When my money coming? You ain't even listening to what I'm trying to explain something to you. You don't care. All you want to know is when that check coming.
Exactly.
You know, we know that our kids understand. Oh, well, sometimes, like you said earlier, that it's not an easy task, not a quick fix. It's something that they got to work at. And
that's
a
true.
Book I read a long time ago was written by the CEO of Black Enterprise Magazine, Earl Graves, and he wrote a book called How to Succeed in Business Without Being White. And if people take the time out, and I read that book, and when he first talked about how his dad made him learn that business was hard, he used to sell newspapers. But his dad told him he can only sell on one side of the street. He couldn't sell on the other side of the street. So he had to figure out how he going to make his business grow or make money by selling newspapers on one side of the street. And he couldn't sell newspapers on the other side. Showing him basically that it's hard in life, but you still can succeed. So if we educate our kids and make them understand that ain't nothing easy. There's no quick fix for nothing. Everybody always want to go out here and think, just because I invest some money in this pyramid scheme, I'm going to make $5,000 next week or $50,000 next week, not realizing you study adding people to this pyramid. And if these people don't add more people behind you, you ain't making no money. So you're losing your
That's
life.
True.
But anyway,
that's true.
These people don't realize if we don't make our kids let them know and show them that it ain't always easy. It ain't always what they call it. It ain't always cake and pies. When you go out here in the world, because there's going to be some turmoil. There's going to be some turndowns. You got to be willing to take rejection. You got to be willing to keep moving if somebody rejects you. Don't stop because
That's
somebody
it.
Told you. You got to keep pushing.
That's
so
it.
We got to make our kids read these books that are out there. But like I said, most parents nowadays these parents ain't parents like we used to have. They're not out here making them read. They'd rather go buy them a video game and send them in the room and tell them go about the business.
But a lot of these parents that we're speaking of, they don't know how to read. They don't know how to comprehend. They have worked mediocre jobs just to say, hey, I got a job. But the government is never out of their life long enough for them to succeed and stand on their own 2 feet.
See, honestly, you just reiterated what I was talking about, Onis, that we have passed down the slave stupidity from one generation to the next.
And
we have used the excuse that that's all I knew how to do. That we got to get past that damn excuse and understand, as my wife always say, we can read now. You know, it used to be against the law when we were slaves. To read, you get caught, you get beat, you get killed. Nowadays, we pass up the damn library and the internet on purpose. On our own, we got full access just like the white kids do. But our kids rather go to the basketball court and the football field, like you said, and we let them go. You know, little Jimmy come home with a D, and he's still on the damn football team. Nah, hell no. You can't get no better than a D. You don't need to be on the team. You see what I'm
That's
saying?
True.
But we perpetuate that stupidity in our own community, and we keep it going because we use the excuse, that's all I knew how to do.
Look.
Then learn something new then if that's all the hell you know how to do.
And white folk ain't got to do nothing to us because they know they can put the library right in the middle of our neighborhood.
We're going to walk around or smoke weed in front of them.
Yeah, we got them in the middle of our neighborhood.
Smoking weed. go in your car in there and learn
and try to run the white man's door too.
And then talk about the white man holding us down. Which one? Which man, white man, is assigning you, bro? Tell me his name. You don't even know it.
True.
You ain't never
met
him. But the white man holding you
down.
Nah, you hold you down. You and them $5 sets you keep on rolling up.
The blunt, the big
army.
Oh, but you know what? Going back to the young lady Breonna Taylor, I couldn't even imagine how. I know I have one daughter, and I know if anything should happen to her. Oh, my God, would I even have the strength to even get out and fight for justice for her? I commend her mom for getting out and saying, I lost something so precious to me, but I'm going to fight for not just my daughter. I'm really fighting for my race of people, an ungrateful people, if you ask me, on so many levels. We are ungrateful because, first of all, we don't appreciate what we have. We don't recognize our blessing. We do not take, we don't appreciate that we are blessed in so many ways because we're so focused on foolishness. But this mother is not just fighting for justice for herself. When you really look at it, she's fighting for justice for her people. How many people have called her up and said, I thank you, because this is not something that she has to do. She could say, hey, I'm going to, for my daughter, I'm not thinking of the next young black woman that, you know, may get caught up in the crossfires of a diabolical situation and get killed. But no, she's fighting for a people, you know. How many, you know, Trayvon Martin's mom, you know, these mothers, you know, these black women, they're out here, they're fighting not just for justice for their people, but for us, you know. So I commend her mom. My heart goes out to her. I feel for her. This is her child, her young, beautiful child that has been killed by an unjust system, not just the police, but an unjust system.
Right.
Her life was taken
about,
from her before she even had a chance to live it.
We keep hollering about Black Lives Matter, right? But let me tell you something. White folks don't believe us when we say Black Lives Matter. You want me to tell you why? Because they don't matter
to us.
We prove it every day by killing each other and mistreating the hell out of each other.
That we don't
give a damn about black lives. So if we don't give a damn about black lives, why do we think white people gonna give a damn about them? And you have to understand that it has been hunting season on black youth. I mean black people. Period. For a long time. And we have not done anything to deter. Our whole system has done nothing. I mean, white cops walk away from it like it's nothing. You know, and until that is a deterrence, put in a consequence to their wrongdoing, it's going to continue to happen. And until we start treating each other like we give a damn about each other, like we say Black Lives Matter, it's not going to matter to them either. So
well, that's
just,
true.
That's
we got to matter to each other first.
Say again?
I said we have to matter. Our lives have to matter to us first.
Exactly. That's my point exactly. Yeah, because we kill every day. We kill each other every day in the hood, one after the other. We are self-hatred. You know, we got so much self-hatred in us. We got so much disdain and distrust of each other and we degrade and demean each other so much right in front of white folks. And then we want them to treat us with respect. How in the hell are they going to treat us with respect when we don't even respect ourselves? We walk around with our pain hanging off our ass. We walk around, you know, cussing each other out, calling each other niggas, calling each other, you know, B's and H's, to women, you know, right in front. I mean, we just carry ourselves raggedy. We used to be in the late '60s and early '50s and all that. We carried ourselves with honor. Men dressed like men. We wore certain ties and kept our pants pulled up and had a belt on and hats, and you know, we looked like something. Nowadays, you can tell the pastor from the young cat that just walked in off the street in the church now. You can't tell, you know, pastor dressed a certain way. Mr. So-and-so dressed a certain way. Nowadays, you got cats 60 years old dressing like they 16. Mm. Man, if you don't straighten up and fly right and quit acting a fool in these streets, white folks ain't going to never respect you. And why should they? You don't respect yourself. You know, so we got to get back to some type of, community activism where we start getting our diseases together within our own community first. And then we'll be able to see some help from outside. Until then, we're going to stay sick. Like they used to say in the slave days, bosses, we sick? Yes, we sick. Now, bottom line, we sick. We've been sick for a long time. And I don't care what nobody say, you ain't going to never get well if you don't think you sick. So that's where we are as a black community. We sick and we need to get well. But, hey, this has been a beautiful talk on 219, the talk, as we call it. And, hey, look, I appreciate Trader Ray and Owner Owners for falling in line with this conversation today. And it has been a gem. I hope some black folks sitting there are listening and twiddling their thumbs and thinking about what their next move is going to be, because we got some moves to make, especially come November. We got an election coming up, and it's really, literally vote or die, damn it. And that's just all it is doing. So if you ain't with the vote, I don't care what you got to do, skip that, whatever. But you get your behind in there and get registered and vote.
All right, Trainer Ray, go ahead and sign out for us from the crooked letter.
Hey, this Trainer Ray down in the dirty. Sip the crooked letter as you know it. Signing off from 219 to talk. Thank y'all for joining us this evening. Come back and see us every Thursday evening at 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock, whichever time we can post it, get there. Come back out and join us. Also join me on my show on Saturdays at 12 noon. Thank you, and y'all have a good evening.
All right. On this, hop on the thing and let us know what we got going on, mama, and sign off.
H-Town on the north side, we greatly appreciate you on 219 The Talk. Get mad about it, get mad, because if you get mad, you're going to take action. I encourage each and every one, as they said, get out and vote. Vote or die. That's where we are. So we look for you back here next Thursday, same time, same bad channel. Y'all have a blessed week.
Amen. But this is J.D. Ball. Sitting back, relaxing here at H-Town, letting y'all know, look here, man, it's time to get off your can and get out here and vote. I don't care who you vote for. I just want your voice to be heard. If you don't go out and vote, I don't want to hear you crying after the election is over with about who won and who didn't win. Shut your mouth, as they used to say in the old Wisconsin days, put a piece of leather in your mouth and bite down and take the pain. Shut your mouth. So get your behind up. Get out and vote. I don't care who you vote for, just vote.
All right, and this is Queenie. Love you all. God bless.
Oh, 219. 219.